Okay, thank you very much for showing some interest in our topic of Pajalpa. It will destroy this movement. Actually, this year in Mayapur at the ILS where I was giving this presentation. And yeah, it was quite well attended. Everybody was curious. Because I guess especially at the moment, you know, in these modern days with internet becoming, taking over more and more our life, and also so many things going on in ISKCON, and so the tendency for Pajalpa is ever increasing, like everything in Krishna consciousness is ever increasing. So this tendency for Pajalpa also. And yeah, I mean, we will discover, or not we will discover, we probably know already, that the main danger for Lord Chaitanya Sankarjaya movement is not coming from outside, but from inside. Right? Whenever there are some attacks on ISKCON, you know, that usually unites devotees in fighting these attacks. But what is so detrimental and destructive is these attacks from within. That has a very destructive effect. And I mean, this title, Pajalpa, it will destroy this movement, actually it was a statement by Prabhupada. But the way I at least understand it is not that it is like a prediction, this will happen, but it's more like a warning, you know, that if we can't get rid of these bad habits, then it may very well destroy this movement. That's at least my humble understanding. And of course, let's remember a few Shastric references, Nectar of Instruction, verse number 2, Atyapa Yasascha, Pajalpa Niyamagraha. So there we have the Pajalpa, that our devotional service is spoiled when we become too entangled in talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters. And of course, we probably all have heard these things so many times, and yet we may not realize how much of our daily talk falls into that category. Yes, we may not realize. So that's why I like to discuss this topic, actually, just to make us conscious. You know, that we become more mindful and aware, because also Prabhupada, as far as I've heard, was making the statement before becoming Krishna conscious, we have to become conscious first. And so often we are just so unconscious, you know, saying things, doing things, unconsciously floating through our day, our life. And yeah. So, step number one is always hearing about these things to become conscious. And then there's a few other steps. Maybe at the end we can quickly discuss them also. Very practical steps which work very nicely if we want to transform any unwanted patterns of behaviors, whether that's envy or false ego or Pajalpa. Actually, we will also discover that most forms of Pajalpa have their roots in envy, actually. So that's also pretty interesting. Yes. Yes, so and then Nectar of Instruction, we also have verse number 1, Vacho Vigamana Sakura Vigam, Jiva Vigam, Udara Pasta Vigam. So meaning that we have to learn to tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, not only if we want to make disciples all over the world, but I dare say, if we want to go back to Godhead and if we want to make some progress, we have to learn to control these urges. And yes, as we all know, the tongue has these two tendencies to eat. So the overeating is also one of those unwanted things. Two tendencies, overeating and talking, mundane subject matters. And interesting to understand, if we overeat, no matter how nutritious the food may be, Marge is expert in Ayurveda, if we overeat, it will create toxins in the gross body, right? Because simply we can't digest it, and undigested food, you know, develops toxins. So, and that's why sometimes it's no harm to detoxify a little bit by fasting. Actually, there's also quite strong purports where Prabhupada says the fasting days, such as Ekadashi and the appearance of different incarnations of the Lord, they're meant to reduce the fat in the body. You know, very blunt. Yes, so it's good to give the system a break, you know, and detoxify a little bit. And interestingly, Pajalpa, talking unnecessarily about mundane things, also creates toxins in the subtle body. His Holiness Satchinanda Swami, he describes so nicely how the holy name carries an echo called Dvani. And after we are in a nice kirtan or we hear some uplifting kirtan, we may feel some nice warm feeling there in the heart, and we feel like just going, you know, in seclusion and chanting an extra round or something, and we can feel this Dvani, this echo still working on our heart even after chanting, you know. So, and the quickest way to destroy this echo is through Pajalpa, because that immediately switches on the mundane mind, and then, you know, this echo is destroyed, you know. So, whoever has attended any of the holy name retreats, I like to do, you know, in a 3-day holy name retreat, I usually call one day a bit of a mauna vrata, where we just stop talking. You know, of course, in the seminar, was always the usual talk continues, but no private talk. And actually, it's interesting to observe how difficult this is for people. Just one day, not to talk, you know. Yeah, the tongue is so pushing, this urge to speak something is so strong, you know, that people find it really difficult to just control this for one day, you know. And of course, we are not creating some new process here of controlling the tongue through not speaking. We all know the real way to control the tongue is by talking Krishna Katha, but this is not so easy, you know. So in these retreats, I find it always very helpful just to turn more within, you know, and go more, look in our heart and see where are we standing there with our relationship with the Holy Name and so on, you know. Yes. So, and Prabhupada also very strongly emphasized this detrimental effect of Pajalpa. There is this nice story in Koma Prabhu's book, The Transcendental Adventure, describing Prabhupada's pastimes in Australia and New Zealand. And there is Upendra. He seems to have had this tendency for talking Pujalpa. So the situation was, Upendra was cooking Prabhupada's lunch in the kitchen, and Prabhupada's room was next to the kitchen, and some devotees came back from India. And as it usually goes, there's all these latest news. Oh, this devotee, that devotee did this, and oh, have you heard, and. So these kind of talks were going on in the kitchen while Upendra was cooking Prabhupada's lunch. And Prabhupada heard it. And in a very angry mood, he called Upendra in his room. What are you doing? You're not talking Pujalpa? And then Upendra is asking, oh, Prabhupada is talking about other devotees Pujalpa? And Prabhupada, yes. This devotee, that devotee, life is short, don't waste your time. You know, when two devotees meet, they should talk about Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, how to serve the Lord, not this devotee, that devotee. You know. So Prabhupada gave him a whole heavy lecture, you know. And then there was another story, also with Upendra, also in Australia somewhere, Melbourne, I think. And where Prabhupada also caught him talking Pujalpa. And that's when Prabhupada was saying, Pujalpa, it will destroy this movement. You know? Yes. Yeah, so there were quite a few incidences where Prabhupada was quite strongly on this. And of course, yes, internet, social media really increases this tendency for Pujalpa. That's one reason why I live without a phone, believe it or not. You too, really? Huh?
1 year.
1 year. Well, I've never had one. And I don't want to have one. So, of course, I have a computer. I have to communicate. But, yeah, these phones, my God, it would drive me nuts, you know? And I quite nicely travel the world without a phone. You don't need it, actually, you know. Yes. Yeah, so, and I can see how I am protected, you know, from all this Pujalpa. I'm usually the last one who hears things because I'm not on WhatsApp and Facebook and this and that, you know. No. No clue. So, and it's a good way to be. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, there is this funny little story where when the telex machine came out, so telex was the previous technology to fax, was telex, of course, today nobody even knows this anymore. But yeah, so in America somewhere, devotees had this telex machine as the new investment there, you know, in the temple. And Prabhupada came for a visit, and the devotees were showing him, oh, this is telex. You know, I think it was the first technology where simultaneously the message reached the receiver, you know, was a big thing. Prabhupada was always communicating with telegram, right? He was writing telegrams. So no, nobody in this world is doing this anymore. And yes, so devotees showed Prabhupada, here we type the message in and simultaneously it comes out at the other end of the world. And Prabhupada, yes, he liked to sometimes check out the modern technology. So, and then devotees were suggesting, maybe all temples should have such a telex machine. Then we can really communicate. But Prabhupada's reaction was different. He said, no, then you will talk Pujalpa all over the world. So Prabhupada knew. You know? And yeah, sometimes I'm wondering what Prabhupada would say about WhatsApp and Facebook and all these things. Of course, we all know there is some little useful thing there also, no doubt. But yeah, many, if not most devotees, agree that the negative part is outweighing the positive part, actually. You know. Yeah, so we have to be very careful that we don't become controlled by these things and become a slave in these of internet and social media. Also, I remember hearing, just in regards to technology, I think it was in Juhu, the devotees put a phone line in Prabhupada's quarters. They thought this would be really good for Prabhupada to have his phone there in his room. I think he never had a phone anywhere else in his room. So, and then first night, in the middle of the night, the phone rang. From there the call came.
No,
the phone was there. Okay. So, and then, you know, Prabhupada went in the middle of the night, answered the phone, and then there was just somebody, oh yes, Swamiji, I just wanted to say Hare Krishna or something. And next morning, Prabhupada ordered to remove the phone line. You know, he didn't want to have it. It was enough. The one call in the middle of the night, so no need for phone, you know. Yes. So, actually, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's book, Bhakti Loka, and the chapter of the six faults that destroy bhakti, there he discusses all kinds of variations, categories of prajalpa. And I would like to briefly go through them just to make us a bit more conscious what all falls into this, you know, group of prajalpa. So in Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he basically starts by saying that today people are becoming more and more godless, right? God consciousness is decreasing. So, and therefore also their talk is godless, obviously. And that means prajalpa, basically. Any kind of godless talk, which is not somehow in connection with the Lord and service to the Lord, is basically prajalpa. Yes. And yes, he emphasizes this, that it creates a great impediment in devotional service. And as I mentioned, very often it has its roots in envy. And that, of course, also contaminates the whole atmosphere, because consciousness is a very powerful energy, flooding the whole body, coming out through every pore of our skin, and travels on sound vibration. So when we speak or when we sing, our consciousness actually spreads like this. That's the mystery of kirtan. If kirtan is chanted in pure devotion, then that consciousness travels on the sound and affects people's hearts. Right? So it's a subtle transfer of consciousness, actually, from heart to heart. You know? So, and same thing happens there with envious talk. Right? So if prajalpa has its root in envy, and then that kind of talk comes out of our mouth, then that envy travels on the sound vibration and contaminates the atmosphere and contaminates the heart of people who hear it. So that's another good reason, you know, why this prajalpa is really destructive and contaminating. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's first category is useless talk. So, and he puts novels into that category, just some kind of stories, novels, which have nothing to do with serving Krishna. And also he puts newspapers in that category. Of course, newspapers, again, outdated, a way of getting the news. Nobody reads the newspapers anymore these days. But nevertheless, it basically means if we are getting too, you know, caught up in researching and, you know, reading the news, the worldly news, this may very well be classified as pajalpa. Of course, some minimal news we may have to know what's happening in the world, you know, especially if we are in a leadership position or if we are preaching, we have to maybe know roughly what's going on. But usually, if you just quickly scan through the headlines, you know, when you look some news website or something, you usually know enough what's going on. No need to open up all these messages and articles and read it all up and study it and compare and all this. No need. And I mean, there is also a nice little story in regards to some kind of worldly news. When Prabhupada was once flying, and he had a group of disciples with him on the plane. And in former times, they were giving out the newspapers on the plane. Now they don't even do this anymore, I think. And the devotees were reading the Time magazine, which is known to be a pretty, you know, good and critical and informative magazine. So when Prabhupada saw this, he asked the devotees, let me have a look at this magazine. And Prabhupada was going through the pages and looking a bit. And then he was giving the magazine back to the devotees and was saying, actually, devotees should not read this. And then he made this profound statement. He was saying, it makes this world look so real. And that's exactly what it does. You know, the more we get absorbed in studying and reading and filling our head with all these mundane news, the more we are kind of taking this temporary reality as the reality. It makes this world look so real. But actually, as Prabhupada likes to call it, life in the material world is like a nonsensical stage performance. Right? At the moment of death, show is over, curtain is closing, it's all finished. Yeah, it's like an illusory dream world here, you know? So the more we read these things and fill our consciousness with the worldly news, the more we think this world is so real, you know? And then the spiritual world naturally is at a distance. But if we fill our head, you know, with Krishna consciousness and all kinds of stories from the spiritual world and so on, then this world becomes the reality. And that's actually what Krishna consciousness is meant to bring about, this transformation, you know, that in the beginning stage, this may be our actual reality. But then as we become more Krishna conscious, then the spiritual world is actual reality. And this is just the crazy circus here, which we somehow tolerate and we hope it's soon over and we can get out of here. Yeah, so that's exactly why we should not absorb our minds too much, you know, into the worldly news. And I mean, I remember myself for many years, I had no clue what was going on in the world, you know. Yes, I mean, sometimes it was a bit embarrassing. I was out in Sangatown and they were electing the new president in America, and I didn't even know, you know. But in one sense, yeah, those days were kind of more free there in the mind, you know. And I only started looking at the news regularly when the first political unrest started in Ukraine, I think 2008 or something it was, in Donbass, you know. So, and because I've been preaching there for 20 years, so, and people were saying, what, are you going to Ukraine? Don't you know there's a war? So I thought, okay, maybe I should look in the news just to make sure what's happening. Yes, but I can feel some change there in my mind, you know, my mindset. Because simply when you deal with these worldly matters and the worldly news, it simply occupies some space in your head, you know, which could be occupied with Krishna consciousness. But it's occupied with something else. So, and when you reflect, you can actually observe this, you know. Yeah, so next category is arguments. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, we waste the mind's strength by engaging in arguments. You know, just petty little things, usually arguing over this and that. And very common in married life, you know, so many arguments over stupid little things, which are actually not even so important, you know, they're not life-death situations or something, but still people argue. So, and why do people argue over things? That this whole tendency of arguing comes from false ego. False ego envy, they're actually good friends. They always like to move around together. So, yeah, false ego is pushing us to, you know, give this gratification of being right, of knowing better, of establishing our superior position. You know? And that comes from envy and false ego, basically. You know? Yeah, so this quarreling, waste of time, contaminates all atmosphere, it's agitating, irritating, you know? Gives anger and all kinds of negative energy and feelings, you know, so devotees should stay away from arguing. Another category is gossip, talking about others without reason. Of course, we may always think we have a good reason, but actually, we have only a good reason to talk about others if we are in some kind of a leadership position. You know, if we serve as a mentor to this person, or we are the department head or temple president or guru or whatever, you know, so then we may have to speak about others, you know. But just to talk about others, discussing others' character, of course, if we glorify devotees, no problem. You know, there's no restrictions on that, because that uplifts the consciousness, you know, talking about the nice qualities of devotees and how they're serving so nicely and, you know, but simply talking about the faults of others and discussing other people's character. Again, what do we do? Why do we do this? There's this desire there to establish our own reputation, you know, pointing out that we are better. Again, that's actually envy. Actually, when is it? On Saturday evening, we have some house program where we go more into the topic of envy. There we will discuss a nice verse and purport from the Bhagavatam, which very nicely describes how envy manifests towards seniors equals juniors. Even towards juniors, envy manifests, because actually often the way we use envy is just that the feeling towards somebody who has something which we don't have. But I like to see envy as a certain state of heart where we just want to be the supreme enjoyer, controller, proprietor, whatever, you know. As soon as sense gratification becomes the goal, envy, competition immediately come along with it, you know. So the root cause is desire for sense gratification. So, and this state of heart comes out in all relationships, not only towards seniors who may have something which we don't have or something, but actually even towards subordinates, you know, yes, by pushing them down just to establish that I'm, you know, superior, acting condescending, and. So we'll keep that topic for Saturday. It's also a juicy one. Yeah, where we can, when we discuss these things more deeply, we realize, oh God, yeah, that sounds like me, you know, I'm doing these things. And because they're rather subtle, we often miss them completely, you know, and we maintain these patterns of behaviors, and then we actually cannot really get the benefit which the holy name carries. As long as we are trapped in these patterns, you know, of false ego, envy, behavior, we are so trapped in them that our chanting can be compared to an elephant taking bath. So what does the elephant do when he takes bath? First thing, with his trunk, he takes the dust, throws it back on his back again. So that's exactly what we do. If we don't, parallel to chanting, also work internally on serving according to Vaishnava etiquette and culture and uprooting these and transforming these unwanted patterns of behavior. Yeah, highly important. Otherwise, we can chant, you know, for 30, 40 years, but nothing much happens actually, you know. We're just stagnant and trapped in our unwanted patterns of behaviors. So that's why Vaishnava etiquette and culture is so important, because the whole Vaishnava etiquette and culture is designed to get us to the point of Trinada Pisunichina, you know? And then we can really get the benefit of chanting. Yeah, so this gossip, talking about others without reason, discussing other people's characters, should be avoided, is pajalpa. And actually, yes, in this connection, gossip, you know, we may wonder, or we may have observed how these days it is so difficult for people to keep something confidential, right? But this is so important that we can keep things confidential, especially when once we understand how important mentorship is, that we all need this well-wishing friend who is more experienced and who we can open our heart to and reveal our mind and share our innermost struggles and fears and to get some good advice. So, but the main fear why people don't want to share things is exactly that, because people can't keep things confidential. And once we tell it to one person, it makes the rounds in the whole community, you know, and then everybody knows about my problems and all this, you know. So I was contemplating, why is it so difficult for people to keep things confidential? And then I realized that even there, the false ego, our constant companion and troublemaker, has something to do with this, you know? Because it's a subtle thing of showing off that, oh yes, you don't know, or I know, you know, I know, and I'm the one who tells you, you know. I'm the first one who gives you the big news, you know. So it's a subtle but yet factual matter there that we try to show off like that, that we know something that you don't know, and just see, I'm such a confidential associate of that person, so the person told me, but not you. But I'm going to tell you. So, and that's, you know, how, yeah, it is so difficult for people to keep things confidential. You know? Another category is debating, which we can say is maybe a more, you know, how do you say, a more vigorous way of arguing. Arguing is a slight form, and then the escalation of argument may be called debating. And also in debating, where does it come from? Again, there's this desire there to win the debate, right? Usually there's not the question of, you know, the humble, submissive inquiry to find out the absolute truth. But no, we just want to get our point across. We are not even interested to hear what the other person has to say. It's just a false ego battle, this debate. It's all it is, actually. Of course, we can say, you know, in regards to philosophical debates, if it is done in a humble mood, you know, of course there may be some benefit in this. But usually as a debate, we call more when this false ego battle is there and we just want to win the debate and we are not even so interested to hear what the other person has to say at all. And of course, these things often go on over the internet, you know. I don't know if you have ever experienced this. One person may say something, make a statement about somebody, or even maybe about ourselves, about a situation, and we feel like, I should really comment on this, otherwise if I don't say anything, then everybody thinks it's true, right? So then we may comment. So then the other side twists our comment around, makes a weapon out of it, boom, shoots it back at us, and then again, what to do? I can't keep quiet, I have to say something, you know. So like that, it goes on and on and on, and there's no end to it. It goes on and on, doesn't matter what you say. And it is highly contaminating. You ever been in this situation? Huh? Witnessed. Oh, terrible. It's so agitating, and it fills your heart with all negativity and anger and maybe even aggression, and you know, it's terrible, you know, it's horrible. So better to keep out of these debates, you know, even if you feel like, you know, what will people think when they hear this or something, but no, okay, Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, finish, you know, because there's no use. It only creates so much negativity and poison, you know. And yeah, I mean, I guess in the last few years we could experience some topics where debates were going on I hate to even mention it, but yeah, this COVID, you know, vaccination, yes, no, my God. You know, I've visited. I'm not on social media. I don't even know these things, you know. But then when on my travels, I've people told me I've visited communities where there was a whole split in the communities, you know. There's pro and con, you know, for vaccination, against vaccination. All this debating, you know, the different camps trying to save the others. And, oh, my God, you know, no need. I mean, then I realized, you know, how true Prabhupada's statement was. The Pajalpa, it will destroy this movement. It has such a destructive effect, you know. And ultimately, it's every devotee's personal decision, and they can turn to whatever sources of information they like and let everybody decide what they want to do. You know, it's like any other medical treatment. Some people take antibiotics, some people rather take something else, some people do chemo, some people say, my God, how can you? Well, sorry, it was your personal decision, you know. No need to have a whole fierce debate there or something. And similar thing has also been going on a little bit with this war in Ukraine, you know, amongst the Russian and the Ukrainian devotees. Who is behind it and with this and that? And this is Pajalpa, you know? Yes. It's not in our circle of influence. What we think doesn't make any change, you know? And on the absolute platform of my relationship with Krishna has no significance, absolutely none. It's all part of the crazy circus here, you know? And at the moment of death, curtain closes, doesn't matter. No importance anymore, you know? Yes, yes. Actually, just recently I was visiting Chisinau in Moldova. I hadn't been there for many years. And we were also talking about this topic of Pajalpa. So, of course, they're a little closer to the Ukrainian war there. Moldova is neighbor, bordering on Ukraine. And then after the whole class, one Prabhu came up to me, "So, Mataji, what do you think about the war?" Well, you know, who's right, who's wrong? Hey, we just talked about it. I couldn't believe it. You know, but yeah, people are so caught in this, you know, so caught, thinking this to be, you know, this world to be so real, you know, yeah. Yeah, so better we stay away from these things, stay away from these discussions, yes. So many offenses can be made, you know, yes, terrible. Anyway, the next one, fault finding. I think we're all pretty good at that. Finding faults in others. Very often, you know, from a psychological point of view, we are actually projecting our own bad habits on others, right? As we say, when we point the finger at one person, three point back to us. And yes, in psychology we call it projecting. So, and again, fault finding, why do we find faults in others? Simply to minimize their importance, to put them down and establish our superiority. So, it goes back again to envy, actually. Yes. And interestingly, you know, even if the fault is there, still, just that we have an urge to talk about it, about other people's faults, is a sign of envy. You know? Yes, even if it's true that the fault is there. You know, so. And it, what does it help? It doesn't help anybody. You know? It only magnifies the fault by talking about it. So it doesn't help us, it doesn't help the person who hears it, it doesn't help the person who's got the fault. not uplifting to anybody. No. Yes. Another one is speaking falsehoods, fake news. Yeah, well, also in the secular world, big thing. It almost seems like it's some people's main occupation out there to create fake news, right? All kinds of fake videos and this and that, and just to put it in the net and disturb everybody and create conflicts and, you know, play one against the other and, oh, my God, you know. So, and we have to be careful that this doesn't enter our society, you know, this tendency of creating rumors, putting some rumors into the world, and then it goes around and it, you know, creates politics and misunderstandings and conflicts, and again, arises from envy, actually. Yeah. Then another one, to blaspheme devotees, which we know to be the first offense to chanting the holy name. So, it is called mad elephant offense. But again, the interesting point is our previous Acharya Sridhar Maharaj, he made the statement, whether it's true or not, narrating the faults of a Vaishnava constitutes blasphemy. And I find this quite important to clearly realize, even if it's true. You know? Because we may be thinking, well, it's true. Can't I say the truth? What about freedom of speech here? Is it not allowed to say the truth? What's wrong if I'm saying it, if it's true? Yeah. But just the fact that we have this urge to talk about it shows that we are envious. Like, let's take a little example. Let's imagine, you know, a preacher visits and leads a kirtan, and then one of our friends says, oh, that was a nice kirtan, wasn't it? And then we say, yeah, it was all right, but the tune was not so good. Oh, his harmonium playing or his madanga playing was no good. Even if it was no good, you know, but why do we make this little comment? Just to reduce his importance. In other words, we say, if I had led the kirtan, I would have chosen a better tune. My madanga playing is better anyway. And. So, yeah, that actually means to blaspheme devotees. Ooh, you know. And if we really look at ourselves, we may have to admit that we quite often do this. And we think it to be justified because it's true. You know, and I'm just sharing with my friend. What's the problem? You know? But yeah, if we really introspect and look within our hearts, then we have to detect that there is this little envy there, that we just want to make some negative statement about the person to put him down a little bit, you know. And last one is worldly talk. You know, just talking about different, even if it is some different, you know, categories of knowledge or something, you know. So, unless one can connect it somehow with devotional life or with preaching, like archaeology or biology or astrology or something. But if we just get too absorbed there in mathematics and physics and chemistry or this or that or whatever, you know, which has no real relevance to Krishna consciousness, well, then it's worldly talk and it means it's actually pujapa. You know. Yeah, so these are all the categories that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is giving. I'm just looking at the watch, so the time is up already. But let me just maybe mention one one little rule of Vaishnava etiquette, actually, which also often is not understood what to speak of, followed, you know, that when there is some disagreement on higher levels, it is not our position to discuss and take sides and, you know, judge, because we just can't understand the full picture of what's going on. Right? But how often do we do this, you know, that we hear, oh, something is happening there, and the GBCs or the leaders or this or that, or this thing happened, that thing happened. So it's actually none of our business, really, you know. Jai Shishi Panchatattva Ki Jai. And it's very dangerous to, you know, get into all discussions, because we don't have the full picture, and very easily we can commit offenses and misjudge things because we don't know why certain, you know, decisions were made or whatever it may be. So, yeah, that's the Vaishnava etiquette, to protect us from making some offenses and just engaging in prajalpa there, you know. So it is a pretty important thing. What do we do? Shall we quickly see if we have some questions? Or I also still have these five steps which I would like to share with you also. But maybe we'll see if we have some questions. Yes? What is it? Mike?
So thank you very much for this lecture. While you were talking, I was thinking about putting it into practice, and I'll just expose myself, you know, because my life is not a fully blissful Krishna conscious experience. Every now and then, I find it really helpful to switch off to something like Lord of the Rings or whatever, and I see that I come back with more resource to actually joyfully engage in spiritual practice. At the same time, I completely realize that it's prajalpa. I completely realize it would be better if I was reading Krishna book instead and things like that. But Krishna book doesn't work like that. It's philosophy. It's still work. It's not like you just relax. So, what do I... And the same goes for talking to friends about something that it is not necessarily Krishna conscious. It might be just a song, a picture, or something, like Tolkien used to call art an exit, you know. So while you're not Krishna conscious, you do need an exit. So I was wondering, probably your five stages maybe would be an answer to that, like, what do I do before I can switch the prajalpa in all its forms off completely?
Okay. Well, yeah, the five steps do give some answer. But also, I dare say, it is a question of taking the medicine properly, meaning Shravanam Kirtanam, that we do have some Krishna conscious hearing or reading in our life, which we take like medicine. Whether we feel like it or not, we have to do some hearing. And then gradually we get a taste. You know?
But that's not contradictory. I love listening to, like, now I found some very good audiobook of Bhagavatam and things like that. But I also still have the taste for something else.
Well?
Question of time?
Maybe that hearing you do is maybe not so attentive or not deep enough, or, you know, maybe it's more on the entertaining level or something, I don't know. But ultimately it is a matter of getting a higher taste, but also, you know, maybe let me quickly tell these five steps, because I do find them pretty practical and they do work, at least for me. Whenever we want to transform, you know, some unwanted patterns of behavior. So step number one is always hearing about the topic. That's why I like to discuss them. Because as I mentioned before, unless we hear about it, we are just so unconscious, we don't even realize. But by hearing, the hearing always wakes us up to consciousness, and then we realize, okay, oh, I better watch out, you know. So hearing is always first step. Then hopefully, after hearing, the desire comes. I better do something about this. You know, my life is heavily infested with prajalpa, with envy, with false ego patterns of behaviors, whatever it may be. So I better do something about this. Otherwise, how can I make advancement? Right? So the desire should come after the hearing. Otherwise, we are not hearing deep enough if the desire is not happening. So then third step is being introspective and honest. Always reflecting. This introspection almost has to become our second nature. That's actually what it means to be conscious, that we always, you know, we introspect, reflect. Oh, what took place just now in that exchange? Why do I have some ugly feeling here in the heart after this exchange? What did I say which I should maybe not have said? Or, you know, why did I do this? Why did I say that? That we are conscious and reflect and introspect honestly, not just blaming everybody else for everything, but looking how did I contribute to this unpleasant exchange, you know? So this reflection and introspection is one of the most important things in Krishna consciousness. Because if we don't do that, we can always sweep everything under the carpet, we can always justify anything and point the finger at the other person or the external situations, and then we will just get trapped in our unwanted patterns of behaviors. And at this point of reflecting and introspecting, this is where we need the help of a mentor, a well-wishing friend who has no other interest than helping us in our spiritual journey. No other interest. This is of the utmost importance, where we really have trust, where we can open up, where we know this person will give me some good advice. He's more experienced. You know, because often false ego blocks our ears, blocks our intelligence, we can't hear, we can't understand. We need somebody who can say, hey, it's enough, just cool down. You know, this was not really appropriate there, the way you acted there. You know, and if there is some trust and some well-wishing mood there, then we will accept this from that person. But if we don't have these relationships, then often nobody can tell us anybody and as soon as anything, and as soon as somebody wants to correct us, we get all huffy and defensive, and the false ego rebels, and you know, so, and then, yeah, well, then it's hard to really make some transformations there, you know. So, introspection in honesty and reflection is step number three. So then comes step number four. Catching yourself doing the wrong thing. that's already progress. Because for so long, we were doing the wrong thing and we didn't even know it is. But now we realize, ugh, again, I had to make that little comment to put that person down, and I just couldn't shut up and let it go by, but I had to point it out. And so, here we go again. So we catch ourselves doing the wrong thing. So now my question to you, what's the fifth step? After catching yourself doing the wrong thing, what do we do? Huh? If it was just so easy, try to do the right one. You know, often people say that, so I just make a resolution, I'm not going to do it again, and then 2 hours later we do it again, you know. Pray to Krishna, exactly. That's what it is. Cry out to Krishna, helplessly. Please, Lord Nrisimhadev, we have his appearance very soon. The things are already on the wall. Or are they only for the festival, or are they always there, the Nrisimhadev things? Huh? For the festival. So you're already warming up. Yes. So Lord Nrisimhadev, very expert to perform the heart surgery with the sharp nails. Yes. Actually, we can understand Lord Nrisimhadev is preparing our heart so we can approach Radha Krishna. Yes. Because as long as we have all this envy and things there in our heart, we can hardly even approach Krishna in one sense, you know. So, but Lord Nrisimhadev, him we have to invite. Yes. So, and the problem is that we think, you know, this envy will also give us some juicy fruits, some gratification, some false ego gratification. Oh, just see, I'm better, I know it better, I'm superior. And that's why we're not so serious in inviting Lord Nrisimhadev to uproot these things. But envy, false ego, we've been carrying them with us for so many lifetimes. They're very deep, very subtle. We, out of our own strength, we can actually not free ourselves from this. You know? Yes. So that's why we need the help. You know? So, and if we do these last three steps again and again, that we introspect in honesty, reflect, we catch ourselves doing the wrong thing, we cry out to Krishna, introspection and honesty, catching ourselves doing the wrong thing, crying out to Krishna, then sooner or later we come to step number six, which is, we catch ourselves doing the right thing. That we will come across some little daily situation where we think, oh gee, a couple of weeks before I would have reacted differently. But now, by Krishna's mercy, I could just let it go by and it didn't agitate me and I didn't have to have the last word or whatever. I didn't have to make the nasty comment or something, you know. Yes, so these steps work. I'm using them myself. It's a lot of hard work. But, yeah, gradually we can, you know, observe that something is transforming, you know. So going back to your example, well, if we catch ourselves, of course, we have to lament and cry out to Krishna. Pray to him, please Krishna, help me to give up this attraction to all this nonsense stuff and waste of time. You know, when, oh when will the day come when I can just eagerly absorb my mind in your glories and your pastimes, you know, yes. Somehow we have to start crying out to Krishna. Confirmed. Any other things? Any other question, comment? I guess it's late enough. All right. May I humbly bring your attention to these books I have over there. Since my last visit, I published 2 new ones. One is on the false ego, our constant companion and troublemaker. All I can say is it has helped me a lot to detect how my false ego gets into my way and pushes me to say and do things which I shouldn't say and do. It's so subtle. And it's interesting, you know. It takes some little purification to notice it at all. And the more you become purified, the more you realize, how subtle it all is, you know. Yes, yes. But in the beginning, I've talked to people that said, false ego, come on, what's that? I don't have that. And I was just thinking, I was actually responding, God, I wish I could say that about myself, you know. So that's the beginning stage. You think, false ego, what's that? I don't have that. But yeah, after you get a little purification, you realize how subtle it is. Oh, there's so many different little aspects to it. So yeah, if anybody is interested, then please see me. And also 2 books I have in Russian language there. You've read the blue one?
No.
No. See? Yes. Because I just got them, you know, last week. All the way from Ukraine, from Kharkov. That's where they're printed. And in adventurous ways, I managed to get them to Germany, you know. Yes. It was not easy. Because they were all stuck there, you know. And I couldn't get them. So, yes, you don't have them, see. At least the blue one, you don't. Okay. Thank you so much for your kind attention.